Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? I'm Finn McKenty. This is the Punk Rock NBA Podcast, and today's guest is somebody I'm very excited for, Lil Lotus. You may know him as one of the more popular, quote-unquote, emo rappers these days, which I think is kind of a dumb term since they don't actually rap, but whatever, that's what people call him. I'm a huge fan of his music. He recently signed to Epitaph, really like the stuff that he's doing now, and I was really excited to get a chance to sit down and talk to him kind of about how he made the transition from growing up in the like metalcore emo kind of scene to doing the solo thing, deciding to sign to Epitaph, and now going back to doing a band again. He has a new band called If I Die First, which is basically like a Seosin from first to last worship kind of thing that I think a lot of people are really liking with some other stars of the quote unquote emo rap scene. So we get into all that, really like this conversation, also some pretty deep stuff about mental health and addiction and stuff like that, which he's been really transparent about his struggles with that, and I think this is a really, really good conversation about it. So if that is something that you or someone close to you has ever struggled with, I think you are gonna get a lot out of this one. Before we get into it, there's a couple things I wanted to mention as far as how to support the show. You can do that if you want to subscribe to our Patreon. You get every podcast a week early. There's a members-only Discord server that I'm in. There's an opportunity for me to review your band or your design portfolio or anything else you want to send my way. I also wanted to mention my social media coaching program. If you are a creator, like a YouTuber or podcaster or something, and you want to find out how you can turn that into some kind of income, then I can help you do that. Or if you are a founder or CEO or entrepreneur who wants to grow your personal brand as a way of growing your company's brand, for example, working with an attorney, somebody who does executive coaching, a chef. If you're someone like that who wants to grow your personal brand, then I can also help you with that. There's a link to that in the show notes for this if you are interested. And with that out of the way, let's get into the episode. Well, good morning. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I appreciate it. I know this is early for rock and roll hours.
Yeah, I feel that. Good morning, though.
Get up at the crack of noon.
I've been waking up really early, though, a lot lately. I can't help it. It's been weird. I'll be up at like 9 looking over and seeing if my girl's awake, and she's not awake, so I'm like, oh, go back to sleep. But I can't.
I saw you replied to one of my DMs at like 8:15 or something. I was like, either he was up all night or he's up really early for some reason.
Yeah, no, I've wake up like super early, like the past 2 weeks. Yeah, something like that.
Well, so you've had a busy and cool year, even with, you know, the pandemic shit and all that. You know, you put out, you started working with Epitaph, you put out a bunch of stuff. How's things been going with all that?
That's been going pretty cool, pretty smooth. Epitaph's really cool. I was releasing this album and I decided to like drop it in 3 different parts, like 3 volumes. So like I dropped the first one, dropped the second one, and then we're going to drop the third one soon. But I got a music video for that coming out tomorrow. But yeah, it's been cool. And then like the If I Die First stuff kind of just been happening. Like they kind of shuffle, like they just happen on top of each other, and pretty easy to do. It's been fun. IIDF like gets me super excited though.
Yeah, I love it. And it seems like everybody I know that's heard it, all the fans and stuff, seem to love it too.
Yeah, I had a bunch of friends that are like, people that I didn't even know listen to Lotus stuff are posting about IIDF. So I assume that they know Lotus. And they're like, I see it on my Facebook and I see it on this and that. I see people like quoting lyrics and I'm like, oh, that's all. So it's funny. Like a lot of people from my hometown were like, yeah, that's been going on. So I guess people like it.
Had you been planning that for a while, or did that just kind of come up, or how did that happen?
Me, Ned, Zubin, like, had always talked about, like individually and together, been like, oh, like, one day, like, I want to be in a band, like, because, like, we all came from bands and kind of missed it, I guess, and, like, it happened a lot with me and Ned, mostly, like, we'd just be hanging out and be like, yo, let's make a song, and then we would be talking about like making a Lotus song, and he'd start like producing a beat or something. I'm like, yo, let's make it more like a band sounding song with like maybe real drums, or like the guitars are just structured different. Like let's like layer guitars. Let's like, you know, maybe not like so like change up the flow and make it more of like a singy, like band type style or whatever. And we did that a few times and like we never really finished them. And then one day, like Ned, Zubin, and Nolan were all hanging out and they just started it. And they were like, Lotus, put vocals on this. And I was like, all right. And then I was like, we were just like, yeah, let's go. Like, let's do it. And so we did that. And then we got Travis and Kale in the band. And then we had a full lineup.
So is that like a real band that's going to tour and stuff? Or is this just like a project? Or where do you want to go with that? Because it seems like it kind of took off.
Yeah, we're definitely going to tour if this shit ever lets up.
Yeah.
We actually got this like offer recently from some guy in Texas that's doing like a drive-in theater.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a drive-in show. And so it's like completely social distancing and like all that. But I'm like, how many tickets can you sell? Like 100?
Right.
Like, it's like you got to fit a car. But somebody offered us that. We haven't really like looked into it much lately. But I mean, I really, really want to tour as soon as possible. Everybody's taking it pretty seriously too. Like, I think we kind of started taking it seriously from the jump. Like, we didn't really think like, oh, we're just going to release this on the internet and like see if people like it and be a digital project. And we were just like, let's like tour and let's do the whole shebang.
Well, it's kind of interesting that it seems like there's a lot of people in your scene who are going back to playing in bands again. You know, I always thought like the emo rap label was kind of dumb because most of you guys don't actually rap, you know, but whatever. So you were in, I can't remember the name of it. I was trying to find it, but you were in like a metalcore band back in the day. And most of the people in your scene were in bands. And it kind of seems like everyone's doing the same thing. It's like, man, I miss playing in bands. Let's do a band again.
Yeah. I was in a bunch of bands, like growing up, like a bunch of bands that aren't worth acknowledging. And then like a few bands that like did good locally. And then like,
the one I heard was good.
Yeah, one band I was in was called Begotten, and they're actually doing pretty well right now. They're signed to Stay Sick, or I guess Stay Sick changed their name.
Okay.
But they're signed to Stay Sick. They're called Begotten. I started that band with the homie Caleb, and then we like got a bunch of members and stuff. Went for a little while, and at the same time, I was doing Lotus. And then, yeah, Lotus just started doing really well. And I was like, yo, guys, like, I'm going to have to like step back from this shit and do this. Because in this area, I don't need five other guys or four other guys to be like, you know, making the music. It's just me and a producer, and I don't have to split it five ways, and I don't have to pack in a van with five guys, like if I don't want to, plus crew.
Right.
Like, so I was just like, this just makes more sense. And I decided to do that. But the whole time that I've been doing Lotus, like I've always said this. I'm like, I don't want to just be on stage with just a DJ and me.
It's so bad. Like very, very few people can pull that off.
Yeah. It's like, you have to have the people that pull it off have like the whole, they have dancers.
Yeah.
They have, you know, a whole crazy light rig and some crazy stage setup. Like not like knocking like anything that anybody's done already, but it's like, cause a lot of people have done it really well and it fits like their whole like vibe and shit. But like for me, like what I want to give to an audience is like a full experience of like, I'm watching the whole stage and I'm like, I don't know where the fuck to look. And there's overload like of shit going on. And like, you can do that with a band. Like,
yeah,
you can have like five guys up there just pouring their heart out, going crazy, breaking all their shit and performing. And like, you're just like, you're never going to forget that ever. Like, I remember when I like, one of my favorite bands like live that I like always looked up to as far as like their performance and like, you know, making it memorable and everything was like Let Live. Mm-hmm. Like that was like insane.
Yeah. Jason's wild.
Dude, he's insane. And he still is.
Yeah.
Like it's sick. But like, that's like where I like pull all that inspiration from to put on like a really good show live.
Have you ever seen like one of the like a radio rapper live that's like platinum selling, super popular, and they're just fucking terrible? I mean, obviously I don't expect you to name names, but like, you know, I've seen some of those and I'm just like, wow, you have no idea how to play a show.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's just not really part of their culture the way it is with yours.
At some point it turns into karaoke.
Yeah. and they'll have like the full song playing and they're just kind of like saying a couple words here and there. And, you know, if people have fun with it, that's cool. But I think that what you can bring to the table and, you know, everyone else that's been in a band is like actually being able to play live in a way that other people can't.
Yeah. That's like another thing that's like really cool about IIDF is that, you know, like we've got like me and Ned, we've got like Ned and Zubin. Like we've got like those were this that would go out as like as a package, like, oh, Ned would DJ for Zubin, Ned would DJ for me. So if we toured, you know, like it's like Lotus, yeah, right. Zubin, you know, IIDF. And like then even then we can add in the aspect of like on stage guitar, like, you know, on stage like drums, like, and still have a DJ. And it's like we're performing all night, which is completely fine because we love doing it. We're performing all night, but it's still like a fuller experience. And then we get to perform the band later. Like that's how I envision it. And we've talked about it as a band too, is that like we could totally go and like just play these guitars live and like have a track that's running the DJ shit and have like drums and like the big parts. And it's like that experience that I want to give with Lotus that's connected to the vibe you get with IIDF and any other band that performs live.
So it's almost like you could have a whole tour in like one van.
One van, yeah.
Which is cool because that just makes life a lot easier. So when did you kind of first realize that you were going to focus on being a solo artist?
I was working a warehouse job and I was doing that band. And we had just started, we were just starting to write some stuff. And I was just like, if I don't stop this now, I'm going to be here forever. Like, yeah. I was just like, gamble. Like, if you, like, I suck at gambling. I don't bet. I don't anything like that. I've gone to Vegas with my girl and I've lost all of it and then some. And I've watched her go and sit down and push one button and money starts flying out. So, like, I just know that that's not
You're
my
cursed.
Thing. Yeah, so I was just like, just once in your life, do this, take this bet. Just like, I was like, just do it. I did it. And then I just quit. And like, I think I was living in an apartment. And then I was like, you know what? Like, I'm gonna move back to my mom's for a sec. I'm gonna see what I can do. And sure enough, like not too long after that, I was like moved out to LA.
I'm interested in that because, you know, I don't know if you've seen any of my videos, but I'm talking about a lot recently about how I think people need to think more about being a solo artist just for all the reasons you said, like financially, but also like creatively, because, you know, in a band, there's usually like one or two people that are kind of doing everything creatively. And then there's like a bunch of people that are, you know, basically just show up and play. And it's like, do you really need that person in the band?
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah, I was definitely feeling like, because when I have ideas, I'm like, oh, I have an idea, and it spawns off to another idea to another idea, to where I'm like almost like I want to write the whole song. And with a band, you have to definitely listen in,
yeah,
on everybody's input, yeah, and stuff like that. And luckily with IIDF, we all have the same, we all are interested in each other's ideas. So, but I've been in bands where it's like that idea does not sound right, and you're bickering over whether to keep this part or to keep your part or to like, and like, well, let's have a version of this way. And then let's listen to it. Let's have a version this way. And like, that just kills like the vibe.
It just turns into like a chore. And you're just like, dude, this isn't fun. I'm just fucking arguing.
Exactly. And luckily it's like with IIDF, I can leave a blank space where I like, sometimes I'm just like not creatively there. I can leave a blank space and like, I'll be like, yo, I got nothing here, but the rest of the song I have, you know, this for, maybe we change the part so I can write something. Maybe somebody else put something on there. I'm open for whatever. And then everybody's like, yeah, like I got an idea. And then it's more of a thing where we're like, fuck, all of them are so good. Which one do we choose? So it's like, it's never like a bad thing with us. Like it's always like a sick thing. Like we're just like, it just makes it better. Or like Zubin will like pitch like a whole, he'll send me, he's like, yo, I started this song idea on acoustic. Like we can make it like a band song. And it just sounds fucking beautiful. I'm like, I don't want to touch it. Like, I don't want to fucking ruin it. Like, it's perfect. Like,
I mean, when you can find people that you really respect and vibe with like that, that's amazing. But it's so rare, and it takes years to find those people. You know, if it, you're just like the random local band, do you really, like, are you really helping yourself by just sort of, like, lots of times in those situations, your bassist is just the one person you know who owns a bass, you know? And it's like, is that really helping you?
Yeah. Well, the cool thing is, like, since we all, I feel like this is why IDF like works so well, is because like we already had our solo stuff and we already fucked with each other's solo stuff. Like in general, like we were just like, I love every song you put out. So, and I love every song you put out. I love every one of your beats. Like I love your band that you used to play for. Like, and so we just like naturally did our own thing and admired each other's like work and like stuff like that. So when it comes together, it's like you don't really have to worry because you're actually like a fan of your friend. You know, you're a fan of like who you're in a band with. Like, so it just, I guess it just works out really well that way. So we kind of been like scouting each other out this whole time. Like, who right. would I be in a band with if I was going to be in a band? Because they've got the vocals, they got the beats, they got like the idea, the structure. Like, who is it going to be? And then it's, we just hang out all the time already, so we're like, fuck, we'll do it.
Yeah, I've always thought it was really cool how there's that that culture of collaboration, which is, it kind of almost makes it like a band. It's like, even though you guys are all solo artists, you can collaborate with each other whenever.
Yeah, we're just like a new band for every single.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's a perfect way to put it. And I think that's cool because it's always a little bit of a different take on it. You know, like you and Cold Heart have done a bunch of stuff together and, you know, it, there's that kind of version of you and then there's another version of you. And I think that's kind of a cool dynamic.
Yeah, yeah.
So how did the Epitaph thing come together? Because I totally didn't see that coming at all.
Epitaph was a really, like, the beginning of it was really funny because my manager is Mass Gorilla. Mm-hmm. He's like super, he was like, yo, have you heard of this label? And he said it weird. He said Epitaph weird.
Epitaph.
And I was, he said Ebedah. Right. Or so he said yeah, he said something weird. And I was like, I'm over the phone and I'm like, what? And he's like, have you heard of this label? I'm like, what? And I'm like, just text it to me because I have no idea what you're saying. And then so I'm thinking like, oh, it's just this shitty label. It's like, yeah, like little tiny label that's trying to reach out or whatever. And then he sends me a thing. I'm like, oh, you mean fucking Epitaph? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, I was like, Epitaph? Yeah, I fucking know Epitaph. I was like, it's only like my favorite bands are on that label. Like, what the fuck? And so he's like, yeah, like they were talking to someone else about me and a few other artists and trying to reach out. And so we just went straight to them. We're like, oh, they're interested. I was like, why don't you just send them the email and be like, what's up? Like, we heard y'all are like talking about it, or like, yeah, whatever. Or y'all are like looking for us or something. And then, so he did. And then we're in meetings like the next fucking, within that month, I guess. Like, and yeah, I just like, it just made sense to me because like, me, like, Lotus is like such a project where I did take that gamble and was like, oh, like, I want to, you know, I want to make it and do something. Like, I want to, you know, live off this, like, and stop working at this warehouse. But I've always been kind of just like, it's all about the music for me. And it's like, just like, I've just kind of been like that about it. And I was just like, I don't know if I want to sign to a major. Like, I don't know if I want to do all that. Like, I had been talking to my manager about it for a while, that we had a bunch of offers from other places, that I was just like, yo, like, I was also on drugs, like, at this one point, like, a long time ago, whenever majors were like hitting me up. And I was like, nah, fuck that. Like, I don't want to be on a major. Like, and so my manager was just like, he doesn't want to sign anybody. He doesn't want to do anything. So he didn't think I would want to sign to Epitaph. And then I was just like, this is a place where I feel like,
no,
I was,
no,
like,
this is different.
This is it. This is, yeah, different. Like, this is like childhood dream type sign. This is like, you know, all my favorite bands. I feel like I would just be at home and I don't feel like I'm a rapper and everyone's going to paint me as a rapper. That's not what I am. Never be what I am. Like, my music is like deeper than that, I felt like. And like, I was just felt like it was the right move. So we just took the meetings and it worked out perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think that's a super cool move on their part and makes a lot of sense for you too. Seems like Brett is really like hands-on and supportive. I've seen him pictures of him like in the studio with, I think, like Smart Death or someone. And, you know, it seems like he's like really stoked on it.
Yeah, he's always like, we're always texting new songs. Like, I'm always texting new songs to him. He's always like, song, that song, like, we should get super, which is like the best thing you can ask for if you're signing it anyway. Like, sick.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniela Clark.
I'm Barbara Ann Wild.
And we are the Honest AF Show.
Our podcast is real, honest conversation with our celebrity friends and pros.
Covering our anything but average rock and roll lifestyles.
All while tackling the hell that is aging and the battle of beauty.
Oh yeah, nothing is off the table.
The Honest AF Show is available wherever you get your podcasts.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, you can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player. And when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
Well, speaking of drugs, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that too, because that's something that I have a little bit of experience with too. Maybe not quite as much experience as you do, but more experience than I would like. And this is one of the things about, you know, kind of your scene that worries me. I feel like the scene dad, because I'm a lot older than you guys, and I love what all of you guys are doing, and I understand why there's so much drug use in the scene, because I've been there, and I understand that it's not as simple. Like, I don't think the music glorifies it exactly. I think it's kind of the opposite, actually, that it talks about, like, it's explaining, like, why people use drugs. So I don't think it's glorifying it all the time, but sometimes it is. What I don't see is like a lot of people who are kind of trying to get out of it. Like, I'm sympathetic of why people use drugs, but it kind of just like, man, I really wish there were more people talking about kind of getting out of that spiral, which you've done. It seems like there's not a lot of other people. Can you kind of talk about, I don't know, what do you think about that?
The way I see the whole, like, promoting drug use in music and like in like our world and stuff, and
because it's different, and your world is different than like Lil Pump or something like that, which just straight up does promote it. But I think with you guys it's a little different.
I think there was a bunch of artists that like didn't necessarily promote it, but they speak about them being feeling a certain way and they resort to this. And mm-hmm. something happens and they resort to that. And like, and it's not it, like, I wouldn't say it was promoting it, because they're just like being honest. And like, yeah, that's one huge thing with me, is that like, I always want to be honest. And like, I used to talk about like how I would, like, I want to get so high that it sends me through the ceiling. Like, I used to say that in my songs. Like, I used to say, like, oh, these drugs are going to send me through the ceiling. Like, all kinds of, like, terrible shit. But, like, that people maybe, like, outside would be like, oh, he's cool and he's saying that. And a lot of people don't realize that, like, that's how people listen to it.
Yeah.
That he's cool and saying that. So, like, I want to be like that. Like, but it's, like, really just the artist being honest. There is like a lot of other artists that they do just like how you say, like they just like promote it. They're just like, yeah, like go.
But I don't think you have ever done that, at least not that I'm aware of.
No, I don't think I never really promoted anything. I was just like talking about how miserable I was and yeah, how fucked up I was and shit. But yeah, it's just like, I know that like a bunch of like sober artists too. Like I know some of them, but I haven't seen too much like, oh, let's get off drugs together. Cause I guess in a way, it's hard to get out. It's yeah, just hard. It's really hard to get out. You got to really, really want to get out.
Is it hard being sober around so many people that are still using and stuff?
It used to be for me. I was sober for like a year and some change, like year and a half. And before I had like a relapse, and like now I'm sober again. And I would get really like anxious and really like felt like left out and really like weird. I felt like I was like the weirdo and shit like that. Yeah. And all that. So it was at first, but like after a while it wasn't. Then I hit my whole denial stage where I was like my whole like not denial, my whole, what would you call it? Or I just thought I had it all under control. And
oh yeah,
like, I was like, yo, I'm better now. Like I did shrooms and I had this awakening and I found God and like now I can have a drink. Like now I can like go back to like doing all this other shit. And I just,
some people can handle that, you know,
some people are wired to just be able to say, oh, I had one too, like I'm good. Not me.
Yeah.
Not this guy. And then like within 3 months I'm like right back in the pit of it. And I'm just fucking everything up and going crazy. And I was just like, yeah, dude, like you're not like everybody else. And that's like, cool. Like that's fine. You just need some extra help and you got to stop. So that's what I did. But so now here I am sober again.
Well, I'm happy to hear that. If I was an artist, I would be really scared of getting sober because, like, unfortunately, I think the truth is that, like, a lot of good art does happen when you're in a shitty place. And I would be kind of scared to be happy. You seem like you're pretty happy now. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, that was my, it sounds really fucked up, but my biggest fear of getting better was getting better. Like, mm-hmm, it was like, it was feeling better. Like, I wanted to feel better, but I wanted to still have this, where I draw this inspiration from. Like, where do I draw this new inspiration from if I have nothing beating me down? Like, and that's part of like me, like just self-sabotaging and just, yep, like, you know, like I'm just comfortable there. But like, you find new inspiration, you find new things to write about. You remember what it felt like to, because IIDF, like, actually, no, I was still fucked up during, it was like 2 weeks of April, and I was still drinking and still doing shit. And I wrote that whole shit, like, fucked up. And I wrote No Serenity about being fucked up and thinking I was going to stay there forever. And, like, it was just going to kill me one day, and, like, or I was going to kill myself. And that's what, like, that song was about. And all the other songs I was remembering, like other shit. But like lately, like while I write, I just go back to those times. And it's, mm-hmm, like, I'm such a like feelings person, like if you can't tell already, that, you know, I can go back to those like moments and remember what it felt like. And I can get stuck there for a second and like pull some inspiration. I'm writing a sad song, I find like a flex, like happy song, like, oh, yeah, like I'm better. Like never felt better. Ever felt better? I wrote about like when I used to like just do drugs all the time. I even say like had to stop doing Xanax so I could do what I'm supposed to. And like, it's like, I don't know. It's just like I remember that, and that's not me anymore. But we can still write music.
Yeah, I mean, I think you did it. It's Never Get Away. I really like that song, but it's almost kind of hard for me to listen to because it takes me back to when I felt like that and when I was living that way. And it's like, honestly, like difficult for me to listen to because it just brings me right back there. So I think you did it, and not everybody can. Like, it's like a lot of people put out their sober album and you're like, man, I'm glad this guy is sober, but his music fucking sucks now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I was super scared of that. I was like, damn, I'm going to change. But when I go back and I listen to a lot of my early stuff for a lot of songs that didn't come out, like I found my laptop and it's like my drug laptop and it's like the stickers all over it and shitty shit in the fucking keyboard and all that shit. And I found it and I had a bunch of sessions that were like the songs that I never got someone on or I never ended up putting out and I completely forgot I had and I probably would have put out. And I was like, damn, I'm glad this didn't come out. Like, some of them, I thought they were way better in the moment than they actually were. And I think also with the music being so, it's progressed. Like, the overall scene has progressed. So I was like, I think back then it was more acceptable to have that kind of shit in songs or whatever. And it just sounds like way better now, what I'm doing.
I remember, like, I was a graphic designer. And I remember, like, there's some stuff that I did when I was high that when I was doing it, I was like, dude, this is so sick. This is the best shit I've ever done. This is amazing. And then I looked at it, like, the next day, and I was like, this is terrible. What was I thinking?
There was a bunch of those that are just things where I was like, I should not have said that. Like, I was being too honest. Like, I was like, why are you going to go into that much detail about, like, how much you're railing? Like, how much shit you're just, like, going back? I was like, why would you do that? So it's kind of cringe, but.
Yeah, to me, there's like a, I don't know what the right way to put it is. It's like kind of a double-edged sword of like being honest about that kind of stuff is what would make a kid who needs help listen to it. Like if you don't talk about that stuff, they're not going to be able to relate, you know? But then on the other hand, you know, you also wonder, am I encouraging them in some way? And so that's kind of, I don't know where my head is at on all that stuff is like, I'm happy that people are being honest about it. I just kind of hope that the next step is that, you know, and I have to remember a lot of people who are making this kind of music were really young, like 17 or 18. And I hope that as people grow up, they'll, you know, maybe start talking about the next step, which is like not being in that place.
Yeah. Like, and in all honesty, like whenever you're, I feel like when you're in that place and you're, you know, you're doing it, like, yeah, the last thing you are thinking about is how somebody's gonna, you know, react to it or like feed off of it because you're like in such a crazy place that when it is honest, there's a bunch of people that aren't just being honest. They're just like, oh, I heard this person say it, so I'm gonna say it.
Cause like all you can think about is how much pain you're in. You can't really think about how anyone else is gonna react.
Yeah, every single song that I wrote back then that was like about drugs or like dying off drugs or like dying just in general or like, let's see if I wake up, like type shit. Like that was all like, that was like my therapy for me. Like, cause I was like, there's no one for me to talk to and there's no way I was going to go and tell somebody how much I was doing, like a therapist or something and then be like, oh, okay. Well, like that's not the problem. Let's talk about your, you know, let's talk about something else. Like, you know, like everybody was going to tell me that's the problem.
Yeah.
Like I had like an old manager that was like, you need to go to rehab. Like, and I was like, fuck that. Like, no, like, you know, like I would in their face, I'd be like, yeah, like I'm going to go and get help. Like, I'll do it. And just like ghost them forever. Like, and, yeah, I was just, all the stuff was just honest. So that was just like my therapy at the time. So it's really hard to think in the moment that like you're probably like influencing something or just putting it in someone's head like that.
Well, it seems like you are in a good place now. I see like your lives and stuff like that, and you like seem like you're really happy now.
Yeah, I am. I actually, this is like my first time saying this, but I went and got diagnosed with like BPD and complex PTSD. And which explains a lot of my whole life stuff going on and like why the decisions I made and like why I lived the way I did and stuff. And I, you know, got the psychiatrist and now I'm able to feel happy. Like now I'm able to breathe. It feels like, So everything's been way better. And I was always super against medication and talking to somebody, and they're going to think I'm crazy. And then one day I was just like, oh, wait, maybe you are crazy and you just need some help. And that's okay. That's all right.
It's just like if you have a broken leg, you know, you just go get help for it.
Yeah. So that was the deal. And now everything is like doable. Only thing that sucks is Corona.
Yeah.
Like, that's like the biggest thing. Like I was talking to my therapist the other day and I was just like, man, I'm feeling like down because of Corona. Like I'm feeling trapped. Like this sucks. And he's like, well, the good thing is like, you're not the only one. So it's not like, like a you thing. It's like the world. So once you get out of this, you'll be able to breathe even more. So I'm excited for this shit to be over because I haven't got to experience everyday life the way I used to in this state of mind.
Well, I mean, if you can make it through this without falling back into destructive shit, then that is a good sign that you have made like permanent progress.
Yeah, that's true.
So I read an interview with you from a couple months ago where you were crediting your relationship with being a big part of why you're in a better spot now, which was totally true for me. I mean, I don't know where I would be if I didn't meet my wife. I mean, and having that kind of a support network to me is like, it's like oxygen or something to me. Like, I don't know how I could possibly function without it. How did it change your life to find that relationship?
It changed my life. Insanely. It's crazy because I was like always dating people that were just like yes men. Like they were just like, you know, I could get away with murder with them. Like mm-hmm. I could do whatever the fuck and it was okay and stuff like that. And then you meet somebody that holds you accountable and it's like, fuck. It's like crazy. Like part of you, like every bone in your body is like, this isn't right. Like you're supposed to agree with me and here's like I'm supposed to be able to go and do whatever and it'd be okay, even if it's like a bad decision. And no, my girl's just fucking sick. Like she just like holds me accountable to everything. And like, it, like, I don't know, whenever I was like really on, like really bad on drugs, she even gave me the chance of like, oh, okay, you think you got it figured out, but if it gets bad again, like whenever I was like, oh, I'm good. Like I can do whatever. She's like, you think you got it figured out? Like I'm trusting you, but the second it gets out of hand, like I'm gonna call it and be like, yo, I can see like it's fucking up shit. And the second it did, which was really bad, I had my relapse and I had like a 3-day bender where I just like went nuts. She was like, yeah, this is not working, and like you can do whatever the fuck you want, but like I'm not gonna watch you kill yourself. Mm-hmm. And so she was like, it's either you know get help or you're gonna die. And so I was just like, fuck. I had this crazy, she let my mom know, like my managers and everybody. And she's like, y'all gotta, you know, everybody's gotta take care of him because like I can't do it anymore. And then I was like, fuck, I'm ruining everything. Like I'm gonna lose everything. Like lose money, lose my career, lose my girl. Like, and I just decided, I was like, fuck it. So it was like a mini intervention.
So that moment of clarity where you, like, I mean, my mom was an AA, so I went to all these AA meetings and stuff with her when I was a kid, and they would always talk about, like, the moment of clarity where you realize that if you keep going like this, you're going to die, and or you look in the mirror and you hate the person you've become. I had the second one. I never felt like I was going to die, but my friend and I got a fucking giant rock of blow like the size of a golf ball and did it all in like 6 hours, and it was like 7 a.m. on a Sunday in downtown LA, and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? Like, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, this is, I was thinking about like if people I went to high school with saw me living like this now, they'd be like, what happened to you? Like, why are you living like this?
Yeah, it was real funny. Like people from high school, like when I went to high school, I was always like doing drugs and shit. Everybody's like, oh, like he's the bad kid and stuff like that. And then I came back, you know, would visit, and I'm like, y'all are all doing blow. And I'm like, they're all doing blow and shit. And I was like, all right, I'll do blow with y'all. And they'd be like, yeah, like we're doing it, like whatever, like it's cool now. And I was just like, yeah, yeah, And then we'd start doing something together, and then they'd see how much I do or like whatever, something like that. And it'd just be like, they'd be like, oh, you're the bad kid again. Like, I was like, we don't do it like that. Like, I was like, oh, you're not doing it. I just, it's just nights like those crazy fucking benders.
Yeah.
I had to fucking call it.
Yeah. I had a similar kind of thing as I eventually got diagnosed with depression. And then I realized like, oh, the reason I was doing all that stuff is because I was dealing with depression and making a lot of really bad choices and stuff like that. And you know, like you treat the root cause, and then suddenly you don't feel like doing drugs anymore.
Yeah, that's for fucking sure. I feel like I still have my urges, but I just, you have to weigh out the consequences, because I feel like any addict, you're like, you know, you're still reminiscing on like that last time you did, or like the first time you did. And then it's like, once you have all these good things, like for me, it's like so much good has come out of me being sober. Like out of my whole life, like that year and a half that I was sober, so much good positive shit happened for me. Like not just like material wise, or just like with that, it just happened to be whenever I got signed. I signed with Epitaph, all that, like not just stuff like that, but like just like finding myself and like that clarity that we're talking about, that I don't want to, I'm terrified to lose that. Like even now, like, with me, you know, seeing a therapist and like, you know, being on medicine and stuff like that. Like I was talking to my girl the other day, and like she was asking me, like, you know, she checks up on me, and she's like, "How are you feeling? Like what's going on? Like how have you been thinking? Have you, you know, do you still feel like urges? Like do you feel like you want to like try anything again? Like just because, you know, she worries and she wants to make sure I'm good." And I was like, I feel like my biggest fear right now is like ever feeling like I used to feel. Mm-hmm. Like, and if anything jeopardizes that, like it terrifies me. Like I'm like, if I don't go to therapy and if I don't take my medicine, I would probably have a fucking panic attack and be like, fuck, and I'd be off the wall. And you would not hear from me for like a week. I'd be someone's couch fucked up with Hell's Bells nose and fucking... Yeah, it'd be a wrap.
How do fans feel about like Happy Lotus?
I feel like they like it. I've definitely noticed like a change in it. Like I definitely know I had more engaging fans whenever I was like just being crazy. Because like whenever I was just like on drugs, because Lotus on drugs is entertaining to watch.
Of course,
like a fucking, it ends badly. I definitely noticed that. I had a lot of people that were like, fuck anymore, but those are the people that didn't care. Like, you know, those. So getting sober and living the way that I live now has kind of weeded out the ones that were just watching, the ones that are actually there for it.
There's people that sometimes, you know, that I've known for a long time that'll be like, oh, how come you don't talk about this or that like you used to? Like, because I wanted to fucking kill myself every 5 minutes back then. And I'm sure that was real entertaining for you, but it wasn't that great for me. So if you want me to be your entertaining fucking train wreck, then bye.
Yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like, I remember I used to like be railing and blow like on Instagram Live. I'd like go live with friends and I'd be like, yo, rail some with me. And they'd like, we'd be on IG Live just doing it. And I'm like, how is this not getting taken down? Like, how am I not getting reported right now? This is sick. And now I don't do that. So... But it's like everybody in there is like, oh, like your skin, what's your skin routine? Like, oh, you look better. Like, you look so much better. Like, your body looks better. Like, you know, you seem happy. You seem, and I like that shit. Like, it's cool. Cause before I wasn't paying attention to anything anyone was saying. I just was on IG Live. Like, people are just like, hell yeah, LOL, you're crazy, you're wild. And, you know, and I wasn't really paying attention or interacting with them either. Like, we're just, they were watching me and I was just like, here's your regular programming. Lotus fucking off the shit.
I think a lot of fans, I mean, a lot of those kids are probably really young and they probably don't really even understand what they're watching. Like they probably, to them, it's just like fun times. Like they probably don't understand that they're watching somebody kill themselves basically.
Yeah. And that right there, that's where I would say I'm guilty of the whole, you know, like, That definitely is more along the lines of the whole promoting. Like, that's like a commercial for it right there.
Right.
So that's where I definitely feel like I was guilty of stuff like that.
Well, I mean, we've all done it. But cool. Well, I guess the last thing I wanted to ask you about with If I Die First and stuff is like what it is about that particular era that kind of draws you to it, because I feel like there's a whole wave of people that are like kind of on that same page right now.
Yeah. I mean, there's like new bands that come into the picture and stuff like that. But like when I think it starts off with like when I was like younger, I like stole this iPod and I like took it to my neighbor and I was like, yo, can you jailbreak this for me so I can use it? Cause I can't get into it. And then he's like, yeah, but only if you let me put the music I want to put on it. And so I was like, sure, fuck it. Like do whatever you want. And so he like took it and he like put Seos in and he put Glassjaw and he put Emery and Funeral for a Friend and Silverstein and Alisana and like all these bands and like a fuck ton more, like Escape the Fate. Like he put a bunch of shit on there. And I was like, okay, like this is cool. Like I was like, this is fire. And like growing up, like I was only allowed to listen to like Christian stuff, like barely the radio. Like some stuff was too provocative, like for my parents to let me listen to. Some stuff was too I don't know, not godly enough,
right?
And like I was just like I was stuck listening to that kind of shit. So for me I was like, this is fucking sick. And it was just my first love, like, you know. And so like that stuck with me like as I got older. Like my favorite bands have always kind of had some inspiration from that. Like they've kind of sounded like that. They've kind of, you know, carried themselves the same way. Like Seosin definitely has, like Seosin with Anthony Green. Like I love all Seosin, but Seosin with Anthony Green is like that translated the name EP. It's like, yeah, my first true love. Like, yeah, it was sick. So that naturally just had to be what, you know, IIDF ended up being like. And I think we also noticed a lot of like people, like shout out Space Cowboy. I see Space Cowboy, because like I was like, they're like doing like they're still hardcore, but they like have so many like little like things that remind me of that, you know, that remind me of like those bands and shit. And I was like, I love that. And I was like, I think we were watching that and we're like, we can do it right now. Like we'd always been talking about doing it, but like we can do it. Like we're definitely inspired to do it because we've seen other bands do it in their way too. And I like, we don't sound like Space Cowboy, but we're like the singy sister of Space Cowboy.
Well, you got to send that iPod dude a royalty check then.
I know, right? I owe him something.
Do you still know, like, have you talked to him at all?
Here we go. But I don't think we went too in depth about anything. One of my friends was like, oh, I want a car. And I was like, oh, my homie sells cars. I got across the street from my mom's house. I'll tell him. And so that was all we really talked about. He's like, you do music still? And I was like, yeah. And I showed him a few things. He's like, sit. And then that was it.
Well, at least you give him a shout out. So he can be happy about that. Well, before I let you go, you've got a couple things coming up that I want to make sure we talk about. So everyone's aware of those. Can you tell everyone what those are?
Yeah. Volume 2 of my 3-part album is out. Volume 1 already came out right before all the craziness and everything, so I put a little hold on it while the protests and everything was going really, really hard. I didn't want to put anything out that we were out there protesting and shit, so I took a break from everything and put out Volume 2 recently, I think about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, and dropping a music video tomorrow for this one song called Razor, which is probably going to be really, really big. It's one of the everyone's favorite song right now. And then Volume 3 comes out not too long after that. Yeah, listen to that, All My Little Scars.
Right on. Well, thanks again for doing this, and I will keep an eye out for all that stuff.
Cool.
All right, my friends, that does it for this episode of the podcast. If you made it this far, thank you. Thank you for listening. We sincerely appreciate each and every one of you. If you want to help the show, there's a couple things that you can do. First of all, share it on social media. If you share it, tag us, tag Finn McKenty, that's me, and tag Deanna Chapman, that's a producer. Second thing you can do, if you really, really, really love us and really want to support us, you can support us on Patreon. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you're listening to this, or you can do none of that. And you can just sit at home thinking about how awesome this podcast is. That works too. Again, thank you very much to each and every one of you for listening. We sincerely appreciate it, and we'll see you next time.
Hello out there.
Yes, hello out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together, we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Minahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.